You're listening to Finances Demystified with Dominique Broadway, the podcast that provokes the conversation of money, demystifies all your finances, and shows you how to bring all of your dreams to reality so that you can live your very best life on your own terms. Welcome back to another episode of Finances Demystified with Dominique Broadway. And of course, I am your host, Dominique, and I am super excited. I probably say that every episode, but I'm actually really, really, really excited about today's guest, Mr. David Simnick. Now, I met David, like, years and years ago, I feel like, at a conference or something, and we've been cool ever since, and it's been amazing to see his progress with his company, Soapbox, over the past few years. So, David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a humbling honor to be here. And yeah, like we've known each other for almost a decade, I would say.
No, it hasn't. I think it's been like 4 or 5 years.
You could say that if it were six, we could just round up.
Okay, let's round up. All right, so we've been friends for a decade. So longtime friend on the phone here. But let me go ahead and tell you a bit about David. So David is the co-founder and CEO of Soapbox, which was founded in 2010 with a mission to empower consumers to change the world through everyday quality purchases. The idea for Soapbox came to David while helping a friend get a startup off the ground and working full-time for a USA contractor. These experiences led him to realize that clean water aid wasn't being implemented to its fullest potential and wasn't being paired with essential hygiene items like soap. So Simnick combined the love of entrepreneurship with the need for hygiene products and founded Soapbox, a for-profit, for-purpose brand. Soapbox soaps are sold in Rite Aid, Walgreens, Target, Bajir, Hy-Vee, like I'm messing that up, Safeway, Albertson, and various retailers around the country. David is also an American University alumnus who graduated a year early, super smart, in 2009 with a BA in Disciplinary Studies in Communications, Legal Institutions, Economic, and Government with a minor in Economics. He pursued an MA degree in 2010 from the University of Pennsylvania in Education, but paused his educational career to launch his amazing startup, Soapbox. So first of all, David, I didn't realize you were that smart.
First off,
it's so funny how you don't even realize like all the stuff that your friends have actually accomplished. So applaud to you.
We're not that. Appreciating it. But.
So tell me, you had what I thought was really interesting reading your bio. Like I said, I've known you for a few years now, and I think it's what's interesting when it comes to entrepreneurs and startups, and people feel like, oh wow, you started this thing and it blew up overnight. But technically, this is 2018, so you've had Soapbox for 8 years now. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey, about how you got started, what that looked like, and maybe just even a brief rundown of like where you are today?
So first and foremost, like thank you. Like it's wow. Could we do this every morning? Is that like,
yeah.
I mean, could you just like, as I'm getting ready, like give me a call and like go through this pump up speak?
Cause
this
yeah, is totally.
It starts back in 2009. So as you told your listeners, that I'm really excited to share our story with today. It starts basically, I graduate a year early from college. I get an internship with a subcontractor for the United States Agency for International Development. And that's like the international development soundtrack music. Basically it's like my first job, my first real job out of college. Mm-hmm. And just started doing a ton of research on how the international aid agency was focusing a lot on water and sanitation, but there wasn't a lot of focus on hygiene. And usually it's acronymed into like WASH or water sanitation hygiene. And I just felt like that was a real big area that we needed to focus on. So called up my best friend, said, hey, we're going to start a soap company. And he was just like, you're crazy. And I'm like, no, like we're going to do it because every time someone buys one of our products, we're going to donate a bar of soap. And he was like, have you ever heard of these little companies called P&G or Unilever or Colgate, Palmolive, or Johnson & Johnson? Like, they kind of have this soap game cornered. And I was like, no, like it can't be that hot.
Soap, yeah, soap mafia going on.
Soap. Big soap. No, so we started just playing around with this idea, and it came back with like, hey, this is something that we really want to do. This is something that we want to lean in on and figure out how we can genuinely make this difference. So we actually thought of being a not-for-profit first. One of our really good friends who is starting to be a lawyer is like, look, you're gonna get audited every year because you talk like a business and you sell like a business and you walk like a business. Why not just be a business with a similar model like Tom's Shoes? And we're like, oh, that's all right, cool. So Googled how to make soap. I kid you not. Started making it in my college. I was still living in the college house that I would have lived in my senior year. Everyone thought I was like either trying to start a fight club, if you've ever seen Brad Pitt basically starts making soap in order to fund his fighting operations. Or people thought, if you've ever seen Breaking Bad, that I was making like other materials than soap. So like all of a sudden my landlord like was making like random stops in the house a lot more frequently after I started quote unquote making soap.
But anyway, so they thought you were like making drugs.
I mean, it's kind of interesting, right? Because like it's a pretty far sway from going from like Brad Pitt to Walter White, but somewhere in between that basically is what we were doing. So we start going to mom and pop stores, start to farmers markets, and Eric Vong, Dan Dahl, Stephanie Appiah are really like the founding team that start building this company, and we're just like, we're burning the midnight oil. We're trying to figure out how to do this. All of us have our real jobs. Stephanie and I were off doing Teach for America up in Philadelphia. Dan was working for IBM along with Eric. And we're like 23, 24 and just trying to figure out how to make this work. And after begging, pleading, calling, emailing, like showing up at their offices unannounced, we finally got into Whole Foods. So like, yeah, like what? Like, this is amazing. Like, we did not make those noises. We actually made more embarrassing noises. There's a lot of hooping and hollering and all types of things. So we get into this one store. It's a grand opening of Whole Foods. It's up in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania. And every person who walked into that door, because we were allowed to demo, we were like hype. 7,000. Like we were just so crazy excited to tell people about Soapbox that we like broke records in how many bars of soap we were selling. And I wish I could say it was like a fairy tale ever after. We got expanded into a whole region of Whole Foods. Whole Foods runs by regions instead of like making buying decisions. Oftentimes they buy regionally and not nationally. So we got expanded this whole Mid-Atlantic region. And unfortunately, like the packaging was wrong and the price point was too high. And we switched from like making in my kitchen into a much bigger facility. And like there were certain things with supply issues and there's just all these different things. And we realized a really important lesson about entrepreneurship. And that is, you know, any of your listeners out there that has an idea or a side hustle or, you know, wants to really disrupt an industry, whether a product or a service or a technology play, whatever it might be. Like, I can't say this enough. The humility and the willingness to be mentored is an essential factor of an entrepreneur's success, in my opinion, because you need that ability while simultaneously also having like the hubris and almost like the ego to have that courage to believe that you can genuinely change an industry or bring a new product and service into the marketplace. And like it's a very interesting duality because like you need to know the things that you don't know and get ahead of the learning curve before that curve like really hurts you and your company, or you spend way too much money to like learn the things that you could have listened and incorporated from mentors and advisors. So like there's a very interesting mix of both having that humility to be like, you know what, While our idea has never been implemented in the marketplace, or maybe at this particular time it's not been implemented, there have been tons of people who've come before me that know how to do this, and I should listen.
Yeah. Who did you, how were you able to find mentors? Because I know a lot of people I meet with, they struggle with that. They're like, I'm trying to find mentors, but sometimes they're too busy and, you know, things of that nature. How were you able to find people to really kind of help guide you and be a listening ear as you were going through this process, especially because what you've been creating was somewhat unique and had never really been done, and you were going after such a large, you know, so industry it is kind of a lot, right? So it's like, how did, you know, who were your go-tos there? How did you find your mentors?
Yeah, so I would say it's kind of crazy in that finding mentors is not that difficult. Finding the right mentor is incredibly difficult. Oftentimes, because usually what I find are, you'll find that the people who really know the game or the industry or the vertical are often either really in demand or they got their own stuff because they know how to operate.
So what
I usually find is that humility, and paying it forward and starting with like the small ask goes really far. I'll explain what the small ask is. It's a theory that we used to get some of the first people to invest in Soapbox. And I'll totally continue on the story of like, okay, so we got into one Whole Foods region. What happened after that? But what the small ask is let's say I find the perfect mentor on LinkedIn. Oftentimes, the biggest mistake that people do is they send them like a novel or send her like this whole like three-page, you know, LinkedIn message of, you know, hi, my name's Dave, and I want to start this company. And like, when I was 11, I liked the color blue. And
just too much.
Yeah, like, please find my business plan attached. That's 70 pages. You know, like, it's like your first step in that person's life is way too much. It's like if you were to walk up to someone that you thought was like, someone who you wanted to get to know more, and you just walk up and you're like, hi, I just met you, let's get married. It's just too
much. You'd run.
You'd probably mace. You'd probably just like,
literally.
And down. No, so what I found is that you make the ability for someone to engage in you really simple. A 2-3 sentence email or message that's just like, you know, and it's a show that you've taken the time to research, that you've taken the time to invest in that person. So, hey, Stephanie, I know that you're the EVP of so-and-so. When you were here and you launched this brand, you know, what did you see in X variable and what was like Y result? You know, I know you're super busy. Like, I would appreciate any help you could give that you feel like is not confidential.
Yeah.
Like, super, like, oh my gosh. Like, she, when she gets that message and like wherever she's at, she's like, I can respond to this maybe 20-30 seconds.
Yeah.
And also it's like, it's just showing so much deference and respect that you took the time to make that outreach. So you do that, right? She responds maybe 2 weeks later, hey, I'm so sorry, this is like delayed. I've been traveling with my family. Like, thank you for reaching out. You know, we saw this when that happened. Great, right? Respond, just be like, thank you so much, da da da, or, you know, and then 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, follow up and say like, hey, so, you know, we took your advice, right? And I always try to lead with like that sentence, right? So, hey, you know, the thing that you took your time out to respond to a stranger? Yeah, we used that and this is the result. Now we have another question, right? So like you're making that ability for that person to get to know you and to slowly invest in you really easy. And what's interesting that we found is that when you do this small ask, what you're actually doing is you're getting that person to invest in you. Like, that's the crazy thing. Is like, so now let's play this out. But like, they're coming for me. No, I'm kidding.
Sorry, all this background noise.
No, it's like I was just totally making dad jokes. So like what you do is you get that person to invest in you, you get that person to believe that your success is their success. So after you start to build that, those people oftentimes become mentors, and sometimes they even become investors. Yeah. And that's really, that actually like that beautifully like goes into the next part of the story, which is, so we're in this Whole Foods region, things aren't going that well because we're way too priced and our packaging isn't that great. So we started surrounding ourselves with all these mentors, and they basically were like, hey, you're way too priced high for this. Like, you need to move into the food, drug, mass category if you ever want to be like Method or Miss Myers or J.R. Watkins or Shea Moisture or like any of these much bigger brands that then get acquired by strategics. And that was our goal. Our goal was always, hey, we want to run a profitable for-purpose company that through each and every purchase that anyone ever makes of any of our products, we give back. And we wanted to show that these type of one-for-one brands can not only be sustainable in its giving, which I'll go into like later in the podcast, but also sustainable in the way that it does business. So we took their advice, we listened, we were mentored. Our second big break, basically transitioning from Whole Foods, was in Target in 2015. We used Target in order to jump into Walgreens and Rite Aid, and some banners of Kroger and Nationwide Safeway Albertsons, and a bunch of other retailers up and down across the country. And then we had a global partnership launch with Marriott, and we actually were replacing all the soap in WeWork. So it's just,
oh,
it's,
cool.
Yeah. We haven't announced that yet. Surprise. But no, it's not confidential. It'll officially rolled out. We just haven't done anything like big about it. But I think ultimately, like, what this comes down to is there's another really big important lesson here. And that is, as you mentioned at the beginning, we've been doing this for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And we've gone through 5 different brands.
Wow.
We've always kept the name Soapbox. Like, we're known as Soapbox. We sell as Soapbox. We've actually tried to drop the soaps aspect because we sell shampoos and conditioners and deep conditioners and lotions and hair oils and all these other things. Like, we sell those type of things. And I think for us, what we realized is that like the branding wasn't right and the price points were off and the distribution channels we were selling in weren't accurate, or not accurate, but like the right fit. So we just kept on going back at it and saying like, you know, it's okay. Like, we're not, things aren't always going to work out the ways that we want to, but like, we believe that we can win. And we believe that, we can just incrementally get better every month.
I love it. And you have such a big, a greater mission outside of the, just selling soap and the shampoos and conditioners. I'm sure that probably that bigger mission also is kind of what keeps you going, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So we're already at 4 million plus bars of soap donated.
Wow. But you donated 4 million bars of soap?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. That's so impressive. That's amazing.
First off, that credit goes 100% to my team. I don't know what I do here. I know that I keep the coffee stocked, so maybe that's the credit. You know,
chief, that's important.
Yeah, chief caffeinator. There we go. No, it's honestly like that's. I can't say this enough, right? So like, for the listeners that thank you guys so much for like holding on until now. I promise it gets more interesting. No, it's all downhill from here. This is the point. I'm just kidding. But like really, like the entrepreneurs that I've seen make it all have one thing in common, and that is resilience.
Yeah.
So I went on for quite some time.
Okay, hold on. I lost you.
I was thinking, good. Yeah. No, but like really, and I think there's a time where people should know when to pivot, and a time where like the central thesis of the idea is just not feasible in the market. But I think oftentimes a lot of people give up before they figure out how that business, how that idea works. And I think this is one of the beautiful things about the pivot. The pivot is trying to find that product market fit. So with that being said, resilience is almost like the number one key ingredient that I would ascribe to the successful entrepreneurs that have had successful exits or turned their companies into ESOPs or have decided to build a much bigger company over time. Like, it's just a willingness to see through and to not allow momentary defeat to actually spell failure overall.
I like that. Don't allow momentary defeat to spell failure overall. I like that. That's really good. I might have to steal that one, David.
It's all good. I got a lot of fortune cookies, so you're good.
Okay. So I think, that's a kind of good segue into even, I wanted to hit on just even personally as you were like managing and starting this startup, like how did you manage your personal finances? Like, what did that look like? Because as we know, it's not always pretty. And I always talk about, even my own personal dialogue with my personal finances as I'm building a personal financial company, which is crazy, right? But how did you kind of manage all of that, as you've been building and growing Soapbox?
I would say that, personal finances for an entrepreneur is, it's a very risky topic. Because there's so many romance stories when an entrepreneur decides to bet it all. Mm-hmm. Mortgages the house, puts in the last bit of money they have, gets their family to put it all on the line. And statistically speaking, there's more times where that doesn't work out. Like the vast majority of times people go bust because unfortunately the market is not too kind. Yeah. Thankfully there are more people with great ideas out there that want to enter the marketplace, and the market has the ability to bear in terms of like making those ideas successful. So I almost would say being an entrepreneur is incredibly unwise for your personal finances. It is very risky. The odds of me, I think Soapbox, just at 8 years in business, at the revenues that we're at, statistically speaking, we're definitely in like 3%, maybe 2% range now.
You're a unicorn.
No, unicorn means that we're doing like a billion. And that we are definitely not like a unicorn in like entrepreneurship. No, I don't want to, take a title that is not true. I don't want to be like, yes, I'm a unicorn. There's like us and Slack and Facebook and good old Soapbox. No, I'm kidding. But like really, like I think it's really interesting because from a personal finance, and I want to be just like super real with your listeners.
Yeah.
I was incredibly lucky, and I think this is one of the really, I think this is one of the topics that a lot of people don't talk about that often, or especially entrepreneurs, is that oftentimes entrepreneurs come from families that are able to provide a safety net if things don't work out. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely in that situation. If things really went south, right? If I lost it all, I could go sleep on my parents' couch. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting is that like my parents were not able to invest like $500,000 into Soapbox in the very early days. Like they were not able to do that.
Yeah.
But what they were able to do, and what I'm so grateful for, is along with me being very careful with credit cards, like they were able to help me without. Having to, without having a salary for the first year with Soapbox. So like when we went full time in 2012, I went a full year without, any type of salary, but also like when we did raise some money in 2013 from our first round of investors, we paid ourselves nothing. Like we paid ourselves enough to eat ramen. And I can't stress this enough to your listeners, like, that you cannot, like, your savings is not in that great of a position because, like, mm-hmm. as an entrepreneur, your big bet is that the equity in the company that your investors want you to have is the real savings, right? Like, that's what they So it's super risky because, like, it's either, oh, your company one day is going to sell for, like, you know, 5x sales, and let's say you still own, like, you know, 30, 40, maybe even greater than 50% of your company after having some investors along the way, and you get bought by a big strategic, or at least in, you know, consumer products world, this is usually how it goes down, for like 5-6x whatever you're doing. So let's say you're doing, you know, 100 million in sales. Holy crap. You know, like, now all of a sudden you own 50% of something that just sold for $1 billion. You now have, you know, before taxes, $500 million, right? But that's the, now you're talking about, you know,
that's the goal.
Yeah, you're talking about like a tenth of a tenth of a percent that, mm-hmm. that works out that way. So, but I think this is so interesting. Like, there are serial entrepreneurs that know how to do this. And I'd say the greatest asset that my co-founder and I and the rest of our team have learned is being an entrepreneur is incredibly difficult and very risky, but it's almost kind of like any other career that, like, as long as you stay vertical and the connections that you built, it is, in the same sentence, incredibly hard, comma, mm-hmm. and not that hard at the same time. Mm-hmm. So what I know, like, I know a bunch of my close friends that are on company number 3 or number 4 because mm-hmm. they know how to digitally market certain products and, you know, make those a success.
Yeah.
And at what CAC and at what, you know, at what AOV do they need to hit in order to, you know, be profitable and so on and so forth. And there's just so many examples of entrepreneurs who, her first or his first company, or even their second company, doesn't go that well, and they just smash out of the park on the third or fourth.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I would say that, like, once again, going back to that resilience, like, if you're humble, hungry, and smart, and you're willing to work hard, usually, like, you can make a living as an entrepreneur. Just know that it's incredibly risky, and, you know, coming from, like, having read your blog posts and mm-hmm. having known you for so long, Dominique, like, it's not as safe.
Yeah, you know? It's not safe at all.
Yeah, at all. It's not, if I were a financial advisor for someone and someone was like, I want to invest all my money in this company, but I'm running it, so I believe that it'll work out, I'd be like,
Don't do it, Ryan.
No, let's not do that. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, but the last thing, and I think this is just me being super real with your listeners, is, like, there's some privilege in entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Like, it absolutely is, and that's super unfair, but that is the reality. And what I would say is, like, if you don't come from a place where you have that type of safety net, like, thankfully there are a bunch of funds and a bunch of organizations that are trying to right that. They're trying to right that wrong. They're trying to allow more voices into the entrepreneurial sphere. So I would absolutely say that, like, it is not all like that. Mm-hmm. But there is that element of unfairness.
Yeah. But I mean, that's, you know, I think life in general is just unfair, to be honest. And I think it is. I mean, you've got to figure out how to navigate. I mean, it's not built to be a fair world. So, but that's a conversation for another day. So tell me kind of where you are, like, now. Well, I guess you kind of announced, like, a new partnership with WeWork, which is amazing. I saw the new partnership with Marriott earlier this year, which is super cool. I'm waiting to go into a Marriott yourselves. I always get excited when I'm in, like, Target. I'm like, I know that guy. It's so cool. So I guess tell me what's one of the biggest things? I mean, you accomplished a lot. How old are you now, David? You hit 30 yet?
Oof. I just became 30.
You just turned 30. Okay. Well, happy belated birthday. So I guess in general, I'm trying to figure out, like, your current impact. So, like I said, right now I know you've grown the company, you have the big brand partnerships, right? Mm-hmm. How many stores are you in countrywide, if you know? And then I know you mentioned that you donated over 4 million
bars of soap since you guys have started. What other major impact or numbers have you guys done so far with what you've created?
Yeah, so we should be closer to like 5.5 at the end of this year.
Okay.
So we are growing pretty fast, considering that it took 4 million in the company's history to get to now, and we should be at 5.5 at the end of this year.
Oh, wow. So you'll do 5.5 million just this year?
No, in total.
In total. Okay.
Yeah, no, that'd be dope. Yeah, we did 4 million up to 2018, and we will do more than all of that. And that'd be awesome. That'd be dope. So we are in 55,000 points of distribution across the United States. We're in Delta Hotels by Marriott, which is their fastest growing brand, including the Starwoods acquisition. We're super excited to be now the soap in every WeWork in the United States. So we replaced Method. Hooray! And we are going to be launching a couple other strategic partners, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, in the coming months that we're just super excited about how we can work with them to make an even greater impact while increasing the quality and the natural ingredients and the thoughtful nature of which we craft our products. But I'd say, like, overall, the biggest thing that, like, I'm really proud of is our team working very closely with one of the NGOs that we are privileged to support has seen a 97% reduction in diarrhea-related illnesses.
Wow, that's amazing. Areas.
Yeah, it's World Vision, Clean the World. Clean the World is one of our incredibly close NGO partners that we have the pleasure of working with. We actually sit on their foundation board and so honored to have that seat. In working with them, we've seen that drastic reduction in two of the farthest provinces out in Eastern India. And we're just like, we're so excited to see those type of results. And just so you guys know, like, or the listeners, like 97% reduction in diarrhea-related illnesses is really significant, because actually in the top five reasons why children under the age of five unfortunately die in the world, diarrhea is usually one or two. So you'd think that wouldn't be the case in 2018, but a lot of places around the world, like soap isn't, and or washing your hands like after defecation and before meal prep, it isn't really a part of the culture. And that could be for a variety of reasons. But one of the ways that we also think about doing our aid is we actually don't ship from the United States when we work abroad. Or at least try not to. And that's because, like, Dominique, like, let's say that you're a soap maker in, like, Northern India, the last thing that you want is, like, me popping out of a shipping container with, like, 40,000 bars of soap.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that stinks. Yeah. I just took you out of a job. So we just want to be really thoughtful about the work that we do. But I think, like, yes, resilience is important. And, like, continuing to, like, work at it and, like, figure out how to make it, fit into the market and really take off, which thankfully, like, we have done. But it took, like, 7 years. And, like, stats, stats, like, seeing, hey, you know, we have seen a 97% reduction in a couple of the communities that we serve and have the privilege to serve. That's dope. And, like, that's, like, I know I sound like a teenager when I say that, but, like, there's no other way, right? Like, almost just be a little, like, just beyond hype about genuinely seeing, like, changes in health patterns and, like sincerely and, like, statistically, like, really, like, really, really, really seeing remarkable changes in humans' lives. And all that being with, like, something as simple as, like, access to clean water and hygiene.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I mean, I think it's cool. I know it's funny when I first met you, and I was like, oh, you know, the typical, like, what do you do? You're like, oh, I'm a traveling soap salesman. I thought that was the funniest thing ever.
It's true.
And it's not. Whatever.
It's so true.
But, that is, I mean, it's cool. You do travel everything. It's actually, it is true. But I think it's been awesome to see, like, the impact that you've made with your company. So congratulations to you. I know you're, like, also the homeless person in the world. But No, I think, no, it's phenomenal. So what's one thing that, like, what's your quote or kind of mantra that you live? I don't know if you've already dropped it in the podcast, but what's the one thing that you kind of live by? What's that quote?
We have a mantra here. We have a mantra in the type of people we want to work with and the type of people that we want on our team are, and in this order, humble, hungry, and smart.
I like it.
So I think when we are assessing people to bring into our team, I want that level of humility because it means they have a willingness to learn. I want them to have that ambition and desire to be better every day. I love hiring people that say that they want to start their own business one day or start their own not-for-profit one day. Love it. And the reason being is because someone who eventually is going to outgrow what I have for them here is awesome. Because if we can, I can give them that sense of ownership, they're going to make the thing that they've always wanted here and like empower and fuel that person. The humbleness first, the hungry and the appetite for more and being better every day. And then obviously the intelligence aspect definitely helps.
I love everything you're doing. So this finance thing doesn't work out. I hope they have a spot waiting for me at that's a box.
Oh, we can't afford you. We can't afford you.
So I know you have something special for our listeners too, to help, you know, support, well, to keep everyone clean, but also to kind of help support your mission. What is that?
So we are so happy to extend all of your listeners, especially if they've stuck around. We have a discount code. This is news to you, Dominique. We have a discount code both on Amazon and our own website. Ooh. And it's just Dominique's name 20.
Awesome. So we'll put that in the show notes. You can go to, is it just soapbox.com, right?
Soapboxsoaps.com. Amazon, if you just type in soapbox, you'll find this with the amber beautiful bottles. And I can finally say that now because, like, trust me, for years, it did not look good.
I love your bottles and your logo. I remember when you were changing, you asked me for my feedback, and I was like, Connor, like, but I love everything you created, and all your products are great. The hand soap, the shampoo, the conditioner. I like the shea butter one. Like, I think they're all great. So we'll go ahead and put the links to Amazon so you can take advantage of Prime. You can soapbox, conditioners, and everything sent to you, or via their website. Anything else you want to share with me, with us? Damien, I forgot people are listening into this combo, right?
So it's great when old friends catch up. Just that for any listener who wants to go out and start their own thing, I would urge you to use that small ask to go and find, you know, mentors and people who will eventually become your champion and might even invest in your success because they reflect that your success is a part of them. So I even, you know, open it up, like find me on LinkedIn, send me a message, shoot me an email, you know, whatever it might
slide
be.
Slide in his DMs.
Yes. Please don't do that. I'll get in trouble. If you really want to start something, like, there is a gigantic community out there that wants to support you as long as you have that humility and that hunger to make it happen.
I love it. Well, once again, David, thank you so much for your time. It's always great chatting with an old friend. I haven't seen her talk to you in a while, so it's awesome to hear all the things you have going on. And we'll put, like I said, the links to the promo code and the website, also to the Amazon store as well, in the show notes, and also the notes on social media to share. And thank you again, David. And I guess hopefully we'll chat with you soon and hear all the amazing things, all the amazing more things. That's a statement that you've accomplished since this interview. So I'm excited to see the larger impact that you're going to be making over the next years to come.
It was an absolute pleasure being on. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks so much. That's another episode of Finances Demystified. Today we had
David Simnick. So excited for you guys to check out all his products, and I will see all of you soon.